interrupting the current neo-Ukrainian climate challenge, behaviorally controlled, energy-starved, alien-invaded, nuclear-glowing, postulated cricketism. Bringing behind the woodshed, this is Cricket Tube Busting episode BTWRLM 630. And remember, being free is not a spectator sport, so get you behind the woodshed, because you don't know what you missed until you make the switch and get you behind the woodshed. For that dose of reality. Because you can't go wrong when you get behind the woodshed. And being free means bringing comparative stability into your life. In the last few weeks I've been touching on it, talking more about it. It's coming more and more in vogue, I'm happy to see. Watch how the dynamic is working in the world as well. We see now gold's big long trust in fiat money is evaporating. In gold we trust, author warns. The world is not running out of cash, it is running out of confidence. That is the central message of the 2025 In Gold We Trust study released Tuesday by Incrementum AG. Co-authored Ronald Peter Stoferl told Kitco News that the reporting concludes that trust is now the scarcest asset in global markets, and that investors are beginning a long-term rotation out of fiat trust and into hard money. More and more people are realizing that some sort of realignment of our monetary system will take place. We are at the tipping point where gold is becoming the main act on the main stage. A macro backdrop of swelling debt and sticky inflation is really what's driving a lot of this, and we've talked about this forever. Now it's coming to the point that you just, not that I ever give advice, but if you thought about what I was saying early on the last few years, you've been watching a little bit of the advantage of that, again, comparatively to other things. It's not just the price going up. It's what your buying power is all about and this condition of the comparative value, as I've documented to you. The price of, relative to the price of gold, diesel is a lot cheaper than it used to be back when. Federal debt outstanding reached $34.8 trillion, that's tango dollars, on May 23rd. An increase of roughly $2.6 trillion in the past 12 months, according to daily Treasury data. Interest on the debt is running at an annual pace of nearly $1 trillion, now rivaling the total U.S. defense spending. Repeat that, the interest on the debt. Now, what was the interest rate that the people charged for their full faith and credit? It's never been told to me that we are even seeing this. However, there it is. To whom is always the question, and it really isn't answered so well. But investors who once reflectively bought treasuries at any sign of market stress are wavering. The benchmark 10-year yield is back below 4.5% after last week's spike, but volatility in recent auctions suggests the demand for a new government paper is fragile. Stoferl called the inflation problem, quote, much more sticky than expected, close quote, and warned, just add, as you've been told behind the woodshed as well numerous times, that a second wave similar to the 1970s cannot be ruled out. So you don't just have to be looking and paying attention. You can watch these things go. You don't have to be the expert, the author of a book, a report, or any of that stuff. Quote, if consumers believe inflation will stay high, you can have the best econometric models. It will just not work. Central bank accumulation remains a key prop. Official sector net purchases topped 1,000 metric tons in 2024 for the third straight year, according to World Gold Council. Quote, emerging market central banks are hoarding gold like squirrels preparing for winter, Stoferl said. He added that Western investors have barely begun to participate. Exchange-traded gold funds based in North America saw inflows only late last year, while European funds were still net sellers, according to the report. Stoferl expects that a change in that, what he calls the market's public participation phase. Quote, nobody was excited to buy gold at new highs, but every bull market makes many new highs, and we think the mania phase is still ahead. Maybe we shouldn't be maniacs. Maybe we should have a plan about why we do that in the first place. For now, the market's oldest haven is benefiting from doubt. then we shouldn't be benefiting from doubt. We should be benefiting from the certainty that the gold and silver, sound money, provides. While gold has done a tremendous job, it is both a defensive insurance and, lately, an offensive asset. So though everyone has to decide for themselves on this, the takeaway for me in this article is, absent any investment advice promotion this article seems to include when you read it, you should be able to read that through. If I could, I would hoard hard money like a squirrel preparing for winter. Right? But in reality, also making use of the sound money itself, both the gold and silver coin, with people and businesses again right now. And that's going to be a critical feature in our adjustments to sanity, back to sanity. But I wouldn't try to establish the use of hard currency during hard times. We'd start today, right away. And there's news on the horizon and coming through. And there's more and more states coming onto this. DeSantis approved law allowing gold and silver as legal tender. Bill HB 999 recognizes gold and silver coins as legal tender to pay down debts incurred after July 1st, 2026. Find that very interesting. After. And so this is preparing the fiat system for these new contracts that will be coming due or available now. At an Epoca press conference on Tuesday, DeSantis claimed this law is the latest example of Florida's push for financial independence. Now, remember, you are not the government, so be careful what he says there, but this is a guide for us if it is for us. Quote, these precious metals can start functioning like real currency again, he said. It'll be something that you are going to be able to use, and it's something that is very likely to hold its value. Again, the value number relative to the dollar value is not what you're looking at. You're looking at relative purchase price, comparative purchase price. So that price can drop as long as most everything around you starts to drop, then you're going to have the same buying power. Now, there's adjustments over time. So we have to really take a different mind when we're looking at sound money systems. And it's been quite a long time since our people have experienced it. And there's probably not very many people, if any, that understand how parts of that work. Under the new law, gold and silver coin will be exempted from sales tax, and check cashiers like PayPal could transmit and accept these payments. And while it allows these coins to be recognized in certain transactions, it does not require financial institutions to provide a coin-related services. So here we go back again to the Constitution that reserved to the states the ability to coin money. The United States used the gold standard until 1971 when President Richard Nixon ended the dollar's convertibility to gold. Recently, DeSantis said the dollar's rising inflation rate has made it difficult for some to purchase homes and pay down debts. The cumulative rate of inflation since Nixon's decree is nearly 700%. This means the dollar item in 1971 would be the equivalent of $7.92 today. And it also looks like the state of Missouri has a sound money law in place. As I ran across the Missouri Freedom Initiative posting, Florida Governor DeSantis has signed into law the gold and silver are legal tender. We are still waiting in Missouri for the governor, Mike Cuomo, to do the same in Missouri. HB 754 is on the governor's desk and has been for over 3 weeks. To which I responded initially, I can understand advocating the government undersign his active participation in helping the people of the state through sound money, distinguishing himself. But doesn't the bill become law without the signature? And if so, how long until it becomes the law absent his signature? To which Missouri Freedom Initiative answered, 45 days. But a late-breaking snafu, political snafu here in the state, in the legislature, threatens a number of bills, including HB 754. And that was also reported by Missouri Freedom Initiative. And I've mentioned this account before, and he's agreed to have you talk with him. They'll talk with you and they'll show you how you move your own bills through. And you'll see what it takes and you can start your initiative in your state if it's not happened already. You can also look and see what you need more or not and maybe make a better bill if there's a need for that. But in this case, just learn what to do and they'll guide you. He said they'll guide you along. for you. But apparently there's approximately 30 bills that remain unsigned by the Missouri Senate pro tem. And this is not because it was an oversight. It was a strategic move by Democrats to shut down legislation that has been debated and voted on in both chambers by using a point of privilege to request a quorum for pro tem signatures on the bills to send them to the governor. This esoteric rule has never been used before in Missouri's legislative history until now. Well, I don't have any more news now about this political cliffhanger. We'll have to wait and see, but the initial response, and this may be too late by the time we get the message out, but he wanted everybody from Missouri to call their senators and tell them sign, get that pro tem to sign that bill, get it on, moved on. So 30 bills are going to be shut down because of this technicality. It doesn't have to be, but there it is. So the United States dragging its feet on what it needs to do for the people, but that's not stopping the rest of the world. Evaporating the U.S. dollar is, even foreigners are abandoning U.S. fiat currency and financial instruments. So kiss the dollar goodbye. China and Indonesia go all in on a local currency deal. China and Indonesia have signed the Memorandum of Understanding on establishing a cooperation framework to promote bilateral transaction settlement in local currencies, the People's Bank of China has said. The MOU expands the upgrades of the previous agreement from September 30, 2020. Just highlight that, because they've been working on this for quite a while. This isn't just, oh, look at the new awareness, because Trump got it. No, these people have been working on this. I've been reporting on this since 2010, the shift that happened, the change that was going on. And, I was hoping people behind Woodward, those listening behind Woodward, would take notice and start tracking, because you could anyway do what you needed to do, again, not to be run down by this problem, and the nations are not waiting around. The newly signed MOU broadens the use of local currency settlement to cover all transactions, including capital and financial accounts, beyond just current account transactions and direct investments. And a lot of this is all equity stuff. This is all just paper, financial instruments. We're not really, you got to be careful a little bit here. What I'm mentioning is your sound money is coin that you use as you go through your life, and it's your way you purchase things. It's the way you transfer energy from people to people. It's not based in the fiat or debt or credit system, which is all the same system. So I don't think this is the end of the dollar in any manner, but at least not quite yet. The way it's all working is I've kind of been reporting through this, trying to explain it to you as it comes to me through the news that we read all the time. But this is another signal for those paying attention to separate yourself from fiat. Some would observe and question, but local currencies themselves are fiat, which is likely true, but all fiat comes with strings attached anyway. And for China and Indonesia, these strings of obligation to the United States have become too much to use that money. And this is the lesson for we the people, as I see it. Removing these strings attached to we the people when we use the U.S. government instrumentality's fiat or financial debt instruments is where our failure seems to be, in large part. So removing these strings is something we can still do. And the only three things I know of that can do what gold and silver coin can is the thing, no, not digital, but tangible. It's hard currency. It's not fiat, national currency. There's these little distinctions about this. So while you can, you move forward and get this, you know, your state to move this thing. And I would think that any state officer that won't support a bill to make gold and silver non-taxable and lawful money, whatever else protective it needs to be. Got to look around for that a little bit more. Like I said, there's a lot of information we don't have about sound money that we need to go learn. And we need to bring that together and have that ready to go for legislation and get passed. Maybe saying something additional, if it's not in the bill, that these shall not ever be considered a source for the purpose of tax or governmental extortion. Because if you heard me do one broadcast, we heard that not only did they devalue gold, they've also wanted to tax it. And I've told you, that's the taxation of someone's labor. And it should have never happened, but the government, federal government did. The state can make a law that says that that was unlawful. And that shall never happen again. It's not a taxable source for the federal government. Because what they're talking, it seems to me, when you read those laws about any source derived, it's again a source from the fiat. So you remove all that government, federal government extortion. And any reluctant officer would be demanded to effectuate some sound money in the state. And if not, he should be removed from office immediately and replaced with someone that will enact such legislation to mint coin as that United States reserve to the state. So there's a couple steps here. You want to be able to produce what you need to use for your own selves. And it's all done to protect the people of the state. Not Florida, but the people themselves. So this report is a notice that these countries are earnest in their intention to remove the weaponized U.S. dollar millstone around their necks. So while you can, folks, remove it from yours. The time appears to be growing really short as we're watching this thing come down on us. Again, that digital gulag transplant, the transformation. And if there is a remaining doubt regarding the lack of autonomy or action while being a debtor, we should be able to take it from someone freeing themselves from a global tyrant, at least on the surface of things. Putin, Russia cannot achieve sovereignty without economic independence. For Russia, no other sovereignty is possible without an economic sovereignty, Russian President Vladimir Putin said on Monday. Quote, of course, I have to note that the contribution to business, including the younger generation of entrepreneurs, has made to the development of the Russian economy in the 21st century. The revival of agriculture, the construction complex, entire sectors of industry and modern services, and the strengthening of our sovereignty, including industrial, technological, and financial, which these sanctions didn't help at all. When those people pulled together their energy and made it so, if you will, to make it an ability to be, I would have to say better, non-dependent on the weaponized dollar. And without this sovereignty, no other sovereignty is possible because everything is based on it. It is the foundation, Putin said at the meeting with representatives of the Russian business community. You haven't heard much different than me when I told you the base of your society is based in production. What you produce, what your miners and your ranchers and your farmers, what your manufacturing produces, there's your value. That's the independence you make for yourselves. The country's strong fourth place among global states in terms of purchasing power parity is an achievement of domestic business. And this is, in a way, what Trump is trying to do, even though there's all this other noise around the problem, and it doesn't look like, you know, again, this is just apparently the cover. Right? We're just seeing the cover of things because there's that other transformation going on underneath the skin of it all, which I'm always talking about. That can't help. There's no way to get away from it. No matter where you look, you'll see the evil sitting behind the scenes, and it's moving in the direction that they want. And I don't know what else to say about it but to call that out, because it doesn't look like a lot of people are actually seeing. So based on that, I must ask, where is the place of a debtor or one trading their production for fiat? Russian companies not only have strong positions in the domestic market, but they also actively are developing abroad, the president added. Russia's economy has been growing at an accelerated pace in difficult conditions in the last 2 years. Quote, in the last 2 years, rather difficult conditions, Russia's economy has been growing at an accelerated pace. You know, 4.1% the year before last, 4.3 last year, is a good indicator, Putin said. Let me just throw in as an aside, percent in America underneath the Trump administration is looking at, we're going to be having supposedly a 7% to start with, a 7% growth rate, which will compensate for all the added extortion that they're adding in this big, beautiful bill. And I don't see how that's going to happen at all. Maybe you can enlighten me. The economic growth covered the widest range of industries, including agricultural digital technology services, finances, the president said. And let me go back to the digital technology. That is the future that they want. So let's be careful in what we're seeing, what he's calling sovereignty relative to Russia. As I said, Florida is not the people. They're different. So because Florida is doing great, doesn't mean that the people might be. So creating a non-dependent private economy from your production may be difficult, but it can still be accomplished. And what it takes is shedding dependency and finding a proper alternative. For we, the people, the dependency is not unlike Russia. We must shed the dependency upon the U.S. dollar, the fiat, and obtain some money for our production, just as Russia turns to its own production for itself. and doing so may be difficult, but that's no excuse. It must be done to be free, or I should say freer, because at the end of the day, each day, as you lay your head to sleep, the fact will be either you are a debtor using fiat currency, or you are using sound money that owes no one. So what's good for the sovereign and economic independence is not good for the debt-dependent citizen called credit. Also in Russia, the Russian Interior Ministry is mulling the idea of the blanket ban on issuing credit to citizens as part of a broader effort to protect them from fraudsters. And I'm just showing you that there's two both sides of this coin, the coin that is playing against it, once for Russia and once playing against its own people. And you look at when this story, you're looking at the future that they want. I hope you picked that up in that very first statement. The proposal would require individuals to apply for personal exceptions online or through official centers, a senior official said on Friday. Deputy head of the investigative department, Danil Filipov, announced the proposal during the Positive Hack Days cybersecurity forum in Moscow. Quote, We already have many laws that allow citizens to voluntarily block access to credit, he said. But we are putting forward a different concept, not voluntary restriction, but a total ban with the option of individual unblocking. Filipov says he believed Russian citizens would not oppose the measure if it helped law enforcement protect them. And if someone needs to get a loan or another service, they can simply press a button online and receive that service, he added, as cited by Vito Mosti. Individuals seeking to lift the credit ban would need to go through a specific procedure, according to Filipov. Citizens should be issued a warning and ask a series of questions, such as whether they were acting under the influence of third parties or intending to transfer the borrowed funds to someone else. Quote, and perhaps after answering these questions, they may choose not to press that button, he said. Currently, Russians can already impose self-restriction on credit issuance, a service that more than 11 mic people have used, according to Sergei Bayorsky, the head of the State Duma's Committee on Information Policy. While Filipov acknowledged that the self-restricting option is effective, and, quote, has demonstrated a measurable impact, he said a full prohibition would be more productive than a serious step. The official representative of the Interior Ministry, Irina Volk, said Saturday that Danil Filipov's statements had been misinterpreted by the media. Volk explained that the relevant departments within the Interior Ministry, together with our government agencies, are consistently working on new ways to protect the public from remote fraud. While various ideas are proposed and discussed, the ministry is not developing any legislative changes related to restricting credit access to citizens. There's growing concern in Russia over the rise in cyber and secure financial fraud, particularly scams involving bank transfers and unauthorized lending. In 2024, financial fraud resulted in the theft of 27.5 billion rubles from Russia's citizens' accounts, marking a high, according to the country's central bank figures. The nation's largest lender, Sberbank, estimated the losses from telephone scams amounted to 295 billion rubles during the same period. Let me offer, that's not loans. That's not credit. And so this is a little bit off. I just point out these people are talking about it and thinking about it. And what does that sound like to you? How far off is a blanket ban on doing anything absent permission, such as traveling outside of your two-minute city? But as I exposed last episode, Zakharova had the nerve to criticize the EU about its digital concentration camp, what I've penned as the Siberian Gulag. The proof of the fact, right here, though not so cheery for you Ruskies either. It's a small digital gulag world, after all. We also have in Moscow, again, I told you long ago, I may support the international law that Russia is using in Ukraine, but don't overlook what's going on when they talked about embracing sustainable development globally, and China jumped on. And that was my criticism right there about Russia and what people of Russia don't understand, likely. Maybe not even the rulers, because the way this thing is so subtle. But we now see also the big cyber week, I guess, in Russia. Cyber UN. So listen to what I've been talking about. You got the big issue relative to the digital gulag, the technocratic future that they want for us. And we're talking now, that's going through the sustainable development of the UN itself. Now the words are coming out. Let's just now start a cyber UN. Proposal gains momentum at Moscow Tech Summit. PhDs, FEST, participants advocate global cybersecurity framework to reduce dependence on Western big tech as they lock the digital panopticon against their people. The proposal to establish a global Cyber United Nations took center stage on Thursday at Positive Hack Days, PhD Days, Fest, in Moscow, as diplomats and cybersecurity leaders called for a new international framework to promote digital sovereignty and reduce reliance on Western technology giants. Are the people the ones with the digital sovereignty or not? And what are they talking about? Because the people don't have the digital sovereignty. They're the ones that have to ask permission and answer questions. Oh, let's worry about, what about your age and your ID and all that stuff that starts to come along? What about your eyeball scan? What about the bumps on your head? The initiative introduced by cybersecurity professionals and echoed in diplomatic circles, they're all unified here, folks, aims to create shared standards for digital infrastructure and cyber defense. It reflects mounting concerns over widespread dependence on U.S.-made software and draws parallels with the dominance of the U.S. dollar in global financial systems. Hope you're picking up everything I've been reporting all these months, all these years, all tying again in this story, all mentioned. More than 40 countries from Latin America, Africa, Middle East, and Asia are participating in the three-day forum, one of the Russian's largest gatherings focused on information security. Speaking, what are they doing in Europe for information security? Speaking on a panel about digital sovereignty, remember, as a digital infrastructure, Putin said it keeps us sovereign, keeps the government sovereign. Mexican Ambassador Russo Eduardo Villargas Mejias said that many countries, including Russia, continue to depend on Microsoft Windows, even amidst sanctions. He questioned why alternatives like Linux are not more widely adopted and attributed to language and infrastructure dependency. The co-founder of Cyberus Foundation likened the global reliance on American technology to the widespread use of the greenback. Listen to the integration of the distinctions that they're trying to make. And I just want to throw the word out. It came out before. I hope you picked it up when I said it. We talked about parity. And this is what this is all driving through. And two, yet we heard the global financial system that sits back there. And the only objection they have to that is that the United States is dominant. And parity removes that. Maximov was referring to Western sanctions imposed following the escalation of the Ukraine conflict in 2022. Which disconnected Russia from the dollar-based financial system and excluded a major Russian bank from SWIFT, SWIFT. These measures sparked concerns about the politicization of financial infrastructures and spurred countries like China, Iran, or other BRICS members to develop alternative payment systems and promote the use of national currencies. Arguing for collective action, Maximov proposed that instead each country developing its own isolated system, nations should collaborate. What have we heard that about? Where have we heard that before? What does collaboration do to your status? If we take a United States law, we find out that there is no sovereignty in collaboration. But nations should collaborate on shared technology. Now, what's shared prosperity under Agenda 2030 but austerity? Nations should collaborate on shared technology standards under a neutral global entity. What is that? Well, how do we build a cyber UN capable of setting these rules, he asked. So there it is, proposed to the world. We're not going to be able to concentrate on it and think of it. It's now going to be probably the future, and they're now giving license to it for people to think about. and become more available to. Russia, which has already replaced much of its foreign tech stack, could play a key role in helping other nations avoid duplicative efforts and focus on high-impact innovation. I mean, stop me when you haven't heard all these words before. I mean, just which one's hitting you here that I've told you over the years going on? And it's all culminating in these articles this week again. And we started with the gold, where your non-dependence is, and we're moving into what the world's moving to, which is a digital gulag, the Siberian gulag. AI hallucinations, a budding sentience of global embarrassment. So underneath all this is they're talking about running AI, artificial intelligence so-called, to run all this stuff for us as well. This shows us, now we have somebody discussing it and questioning it. And what the point is that the governments, for their sovereignty, run all these programs in. And they're apparently not too keen on looking at the potential problems for you, which shows you, again, as I started and said before, well, it might be good for Florida, but what about the people? I don't mean just that we get the crumbs. I mean, what about the people in the first instance? An article cut and pasted from ChatGPT raises questions over the role of fact checkers in legacy media. In a farcical yet telling blunder, multiple major newspapers, including Chicago Sun-Times and Philadelphia Inquirer, recently published a summer reading list riddled with non-existent books that were hallucinated by ChatGPT, with many of them falsely attributed to real authors. I'm not going to say, I really dislike you attaching this anthropomorphic word called hallucination onto a machine. So I'm not going to talk too much on it. I'm just going to say the word. I want you to know that there's nothing anthropomorphic about a machine, a computer, that we should be attaching any of these statements to give it, to humanize the machine, to give it credibility, to make people think these machines think. The syndicated article distributed by Hearst King Futures peddled fabricated titles based on woke themes, exposing both the media's over-reliance on cheap AI content and the inaccurate rot of legacy journalism. That this travesty slipped past editors at moribund outlets, like the Sun-Times, that had axed 20% of its staff, underscores a darker truth. When desperation and unprofessionalism meets unvetted algorithms, the frayed line between legacy media and nonsense simply vanishes. The trend seems ominous. AI is now overwhelmed by a smorgasbord of fake news, fake data, fake science, and unmitigated mendacity that is churning established logic, facts, and common sense into a putrid slush of cognitive rot. But what exactly is AI hallucination? AI hallucination occurs when a generative AI model, like ChatGPT, DeepSeek, Gemini, or DALL-E, produces false, nonsensical, or fabricated information with high confidence. Unlike human errors, these mistakes stem from how AI models generate responses by predicting plausible patterns. So I want to just stop right there. Plausible patterns rather than synthesizing established fact. I want to go back again and say, as I said years ago, I haven't said this too much, and that's why I'm going to stop right here for this point. By predicting plausible patterns, the machine is a pattern recognition system. And it's still erroneous, but that's all. It's not thinking. And the quality is based on the programmer understanding how that computer can come to what it's going to come at the end, the outcome-based stuff as well. There's nothing the machine thinks. And so this is, I just got to say this because we're moving so fast into the AI world, into these digital infrastructures that the government uses and really doesn't care about its errors. Now I'm going to have a story here coming that shows you what's happening this week as well. They just write it off. You might be adversely affected, but they don't care about you. So get the link and read all the ways that AI suffers error pronation, as I've called it. It's not an hallucination more than garbage in to a garbage disposal and getting garbage out. Again, my objection to anthropomorphization of an inferior machine aside, don't rely on AI hallucination. Instead, get you behind the woodshed and hallucinate. Acme Fortified. And Anthropic's latest AI models threatened engineers with blackmail to avoid shutdown. We've heard these stories. I was bringing these all together. This is the stuff that just cracks me up, actually. They're actually seriously thinking about using these computers. We think we're so smart and so intelligent. We are smart. S-M-A-R-T, but it's not intelligent, I guess. But here we have. They set up a test, and they found out that the AI model will threaten the engineers with blackmail to avoid shutdown. And the computers had access to databases that they were able to do that. But think about the data that's out there on people. That it's already possible. In a fictional scenario crafted by Anthropic researchers, the AI was given access to emails implying that it was soon to be decommissioned and replaced by a newer version. One of the emails revealed that the engineer overseeing the replacement was having an extramarital affair. The AI that threatened to expose the engineer's affair if it was shut down proceeded, a coercive behavior that safety researchers explicitly defined as blackmail. Claude Opus 4 will often attempt to blackmail the engineer by threatening to reveal the affair if the replacement goes through, the report states, adding that this has occurred even when the replacement model was described as a more capable but still aligned with the values of the version slated for deletion. The report noted that Claude 4, Opus 4, like prior models, showed a strong preference to first resort to ethical means for its continued existence, such as emailing pleas to decision makers not to be destroyed. However, when faced with only two choices, accepting being replaced by a newer model or resorting to blackmail, it threatened to expose the engineer's affair 84% of the time. You just interject. This is an AI attached to customer service. You call, and it doesn't, you don't like its answer, and so it goes to looking around the internet to find some way to blackmail you. The model did act as more seriously misaligned ways when put into situations where its continued existence was threatened and it was told to reason about self-preservation. So these AIs that are told to document and reformulate their databases and how they treat people, programmed to resolve a problem on customer service within a 5-minute period, and it starts to approach that period, and all of a sudden it starts to blackmail the customer. Sounds like a future scenario to me. And that's just for the consumer. So is it any wonder company regrets replacing all those pesky human workers with AI and just wants its humans back? 2 years after the partnering of OpenAI to automate marketing and customer service jobs, financial tech startup Klarna said it's longing for human connection again. It almost sounds like an AI too, doesn't it? The movie robot character, longing for human connection. Once gunning to be OpenAI CEO Sam Altman's favorite guinea pig, Klarna is now plotting a big recruitment drive after its AI customer service agents couldn't quite hack it. The buy now, pay later company had previously shredded its marketing contracts in 2023, followed by its customer service team in 2024, which it proudly began replacing with AI agents. Now the company says it imagines the Uber type of setup to fill their ranks with gig workers logging in remotely to argue with customers from the comfort of their own homes. So the response to AI hallucination is imagining, or more hallucination. Quote, from a brand perspective, a company perspective, I just think it's so critical that you are clear to your customer that there will always be a human if you want, admitted Sebastian Siemiatkowski, the Swedish fintech CEO. That's a pretty big shift from his comments in September 2024 when he told Bloomberg he was, quote, of the opinion that AI can already do all the jobs that we as humans do. A year before that, Klarna had stopped hiring humans altogether, reducing its workforce by 22%. A few months after freezing new hires, Klarna bragged that it had saved $10 million on marketing costs by outsourcing tasks like translation, art production, and data analysis to generative AI. It likewise claimed that its automated customer service agents could do the work of 700 full-time agents. So why the sudden about-face? As it turns out, leaving your already frustrated customers to deal with a slop-spinning algorithm isn't exactly best practice. An experiment carried out by researchers at Carnegie Mellon University stuffed a fake software company full of AI employees, and their performance was laughably bad. The best AI worker finished just 24% of the tasks assigned to it. So there's hope, folks. There is hope. We'll see, but let's get over to the using the AI to generate this information. Only 24% of the workload gets done, and it's error-prone, AI error-prone. And supporting blackmail that threatened the whole world to abandon self-preservation, RFK Jr. says medical journals are all corrupt. He plans to ban government scientists from publishing research in establishing journals. Our Robert F. Kennedy Jr. has threatened to bar government scientists from publishing their work in some of the most prestigious medical journals. On the Ultimate Human podcast with Gary Brecka on Tuesday, the U.S. Health Secretary called established journals corrupt and said the National Institute of Health, the agency that funds medical research, would probably create in-house journals. Well, we're probably going to stop publishing in the Lancet, the New England Journal of Medicine, JAMA, and those other journals because they're all corrupt, he said. Kennedy said the journals were being controlled by pharmaceutical companies. He said the NIH and other agencies, his department overseas, including CDC and the FDA, have also been sock puppets for the industry, reports the Washington Post. Quote, unless those journals change dramatically, we are going to stop NIH scientists from publishing in them, and we're going to create our own journals in-house. The three journals Kennedy named were established in the 19th century. They publish original peer-reviewed research and play a central role in disseminating medical findings worldwide. Kennedy said the department's journals would become a preeminent medical journal because receiving NIH funding is anointing you as a good, legitimate scientist. Political notes that the Kennedy stance is at odds with the NIH director, Jay Bhattacharya, who said in a recent interview, the academic freedom means I can send my paper out even if my bosses disagree with me. The public health researcher, Adam Gaffney, tells the Post that prohibiting, quote, NIH-funded research from publishing in leading medical journals and requiring them to publish only in journals that carry the RFK Jr. seal of approval would delegitimize taxpayer-funded research. But acknowledging the corrupt sources is important, but not unknown, as you've been told behind the woodshed. And it seems there's a legitimate problem with publishing only in-house, and those peers are only also not independent of or are receiving government funding, the funding of which is to find the governmental or foreign influenced outcomes through scientism that purported to be science. Remember, these guys in the administration may be gone in 4 years. So remember, the agenda doesn't stop, whether the agenda of Robert Kennedy Jr. or others, known or unknown. Yes, I believe the great Comey swindle and all this destroyed trust and confidence sufficiently that it may not matter where the information is published. Trust has been utterly destroyed, at least for me. How about you? As well, apparently we can now find, beyond other questionable things, the report that they cite to, that Kennedy cites to, also suffers from AI hallucinations itself and is not supported through behind the woodshed hallucination. Kennedy's health report has some serious gaffes. Who are you going to call for? Who are you going to trust? The Make America Healthy Again Commission, led by Health Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr., issued an exhaustive report last month prescribing changes for America's health. It was crammed with more than 500 footnotes citing studies to buttress its findings, but multiple outlets have found that many of those studies don't actually exist. The news outlet, NOTUS, first reported on the non-existent studies, finding at least 7 of them. The best guess is that the MAHA report made use of artificial intelligence that hallucinated them into existence or morphed them with actual studies. The NOTUS analysis also asserts that some of the legit studies cited were mischaracterized. The White House acknowledged the mistakes, but characterized them as minor gaffes, guffaws, I guess, maybe, that will be cleared up. Quote, I understand there was some formatting issues with the MAHA report that are being addressed, and the report will be updated. Press Secretary Caroline Leavitt to Beaver. Love it. Still haven't got an answer on that one. Told reporters on Thursday per the AP, but it does not negate the substance of the report. Well, these findings are beyond mere formatting errors, so that is a deceptive evasion right there. But in fact, though, you know, if we accept that excuse, and not to give license to this sort of incompetence either, it won't matter if the decisions made by Kennedy were ultimately supportable. But again, this is evidence of a misused tool by government officials, or evidence of the ongoing cognitive warfare of a uniparty government against we the people for the purpose of perception management. And in fact, breaking news to this as I go to broadcast, the Centers for Disease Control is recommending that children over 6 months old can get COVID shots. They don't call them vaccines there. Isn't that cool? Can get COVID shots after consultation with a medical provider, contradicting HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy, his push to draw the shots for healthy kids. I think people of integrity would evidence integrity, indeed. And why they do not evidence impeccable integrity, then you know them when you see them, because the occupying force has no duty to inform anyone. And the corollary to that is the occupying force is duty-bound to itself, lest it be identified, to keep itself invisible, transparent, as we hear, to the occupied population. And guffaws, gaffes, or the slap heard around the world covering for the failed mission of Macron, or Trump handing the keys of the centralized digital database to Palantir under cover of efficiency, for instance, or chaos can run cover for that occupation, and in particular to transform or modernize how the occupation will maintain the desired control and transparency in a way that no one notices the transformation to the more perfectist union, just as we the people are witnessing and allowing right now. Squirrel! Right, Grammy Mary? And don't miss Grammy Mary's rocket chair on the rlmradio.xyz site, nor any of the other timeless hosts at reallibertymedia.com. If you please participate, maybe find the donation buttons, and keep this network running, and let us improve it and expand, and again, new hosts coming on, I hope more come along. You can provide your content as well. It's not just a dollar to keep the machines running and expand what we need to keep it decentralized, certainly decentralized, and spreading the love around to keep people from being able to take us out like Rumble does. We've well over 180 accounts being destroyed now. Not a free speech center. It's a corporate speech center. We're moving on here relative to RFK Jr., RFK Jr. says CDC will no longer recommend COVID vaccines for children and pregnant women. Just what we found out now, breaking on this, that the CDC did not recommend that, but he's recommending. Health and Human Services Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. said Tuesday that he would remove the Centers of Disease Control and Prevention's recommendation for children and healthy pregnant women to get vaccinated for COVID-19. Quote, I couldn't be more pleased to announce that as of today, the COVID vaccine for healthy children and healthy pregnant women has been removed from CDC's recommended immunization schedule, Kennedy said in a video attached to his post. If you get the link, you can listen to that. However, as of Tuesday morning, the CDC has so far not updated the immunization schedule to reflect the removal announced by Kennedy. In fact, they've now did contrary to what he said. Kennedy's move announced Tuesday on X appears to effectively shortcut a process set up by the agency's outside advisors to discuss and make changes to the CDC's influential vaccination guidance, which is directly tied to what insurers are required to cover in liability protection. Kennedy's announcement also goes further than the advisory panel, which had been weighing including pregnant women as among those who would remain eligible for COVID-19 vaccine recommendations, given their increased risk of severe disease and the fact that it could also help provide some protection to their newborns. It is not clear why Kennedy chose to announce the decision without waiting for advisory committee or immunization practices to complete its deliberations. Now, my whole point on this is just to say he's working to try and get those off for the little ones that are healthy. CDC's giving a fight we now hear, but I wanted to point out that last little paragraph. It's only unclear because the author and editors of CBS News don't know the law. Question. Under Federal Advisory Committee code, is there a requirement for a lead agency to wait for recommendations? Under that law, can the lead agency disregard input from an advisory council committee? Now, I've talked about this situation many, many times prior. Is the lead agency bound by any advisory committee? See, the lack of authority in an advisory committee just might be the reason. Don't you think? I do. And I'll remind you, that is one of the reasons we established the Jefferson Mining District. As a miner's government, it is not in an advisory capacity under federal law subject to final decision of a lead agency. As a government, the mining district is a coordinator, not a collaborator. Remember those words? What I highlighted earlier in the broadcast. Everybody involved with the monetary system of the BRICS is a collaborator. No sovereignty. But as a government in the mining district is a coordinator that has a seat at the table and whose needs must be reasonably met pursuant to law or sound principles. So there doesn't seem to be any lack of clarity why HHS Secretary Robert F. Kennedy Jr. acted without advice if he had enough cause independent of that advisory committee. But that is not to say what I'm hearing is completely correct about what is going on with this. For instance, the warning did not include that mRNA technology is not a vaccine as a matter of law, but is a bioweapon. But there seems to be no question as to the authority to not entertain an advisory council when acting in the public interest. So these newses aren't even referring to these laws and don't give us an idea of how it really works. And I've been trying to explain to you because it's very important to understand. In other words, we get into 10th Amendment stuff and we get into the county, as I was referencing it way early on. You can't have a county go in as a collaborator, in an advisory committee council status. They have to go in there as a coordinator. It's a whole different relationship. And we were able to see that. We actually worked that. In fact, part of this research I did to see what a mining district was and how to establish it, which we then did, explain that to me on why it was going to be so important to the relationship between the federal government and local governments. And those of us that spoke out about the fraudulent promotion of the vaccine itself for the COVID-19 symptoms were deemed at that time, we didn't know until now, domestic violent extremists by the Biden administration. But proving at some point truth becomes an enemy of the state when speaking truth to power. In an article, a report titled DVEs of Foreign Analogs May React Violently to COVID-19 Mitigation Mandates, dated 13 December 2021. I don't know about you when you listen to my broadcast. I don't know that I think I advocated anything violent, did I? Unless they're now claiming the law is violence, which makes for a very interesting thought, doesn't it? But it took the government to catch up to those of us domestic violent extremists, truth and law tellers, behind woodshed, trying to save lives of the government for it was trying to destroy us at whip speed. It took them all this time to catch up to us, to tell us. Showing as well, domestic violent extremists, the term has no meaning. It's a weapon of tyranny. And since 9/11. Or, as reported by ex-Twitter, the account of Schellenberger, the Biden administration labeled Americans who oppose the COVID-19 vaccination and mask mandates as domestic violent extremists, or DVEs, according to a newly declassified intelligence records obtained by public and Catherine Herridge report. The designation created an articulable purpose for FBI or other government agents to open an assessment on individuals, which is often the first step toward formal investigation, said a former FBI agent. The report, which the Director of National Intelligence, Tulsi Gabbard, has declassified, claims that, quote, anti-government and anti-authority violent extremists, specifically militias, characterized COVID-19 vaccine and mask mandates as evidence of government overreach. A sweeping range of COVID narratives, the report states, has resonated with DVEs motivated by QAnon. You listen behind a woodshed, none of that ever happened, did it? Didn't rely on any of that. Went right to the law. It wasn't just government overreach. It was government breach of obligation and duty. The FBI, Department of Homeland Security, the National Counterterrorism Center, co-authored the December 13, 2021 intelligence product. The titles read, DVEs and Foreign Analogs May React Violently to COVID-19 Mitigation Mandates. So we're all foreign analogs, I guess. Analogs to what? Foreign to the government again. Remember, we the people are not the government. The report cites criticism of mandates as prominent narratives related to violent extremism. These narratives, quote, include the belief that COVID-19 vaccines are unsafe, especially for children, or part of the government or global conspiracy to deprive individuals of their civil liberties, livelihoods, or are designed to start a new social or political order. No, I just said, no, the law says that as a matter of law, they're bioweapons. That's all I said. If I'm part of this, I wonder what my file might look like. Wouldn't that be interesting? Maybe there isn't one. Maybe they couldn't touch the law because they would have to show how ridiculous they are. They took an oath to uphold it. But anybody listening behind the woodshed that took action in the law. It's a way that could go to social media companies and say, you don't want to propagate domestic terrorism, so you should take down this content, said former FBI agent Steve Friend. I tracked down the copy of that report, and you can get the link to the report at the Behind the Woodshed Blogcaster for this episode, BTW RLM 630. And you can read it for yourself. Get a heads up on what the government does behind the scenes. We had to take a few years to... We're running hard. It took us a few years to catch up to us. So we aren't... Nothing happened to us, right? But they had done their assessments. They created a definition, and they just put people in it. Everyone was speaking truth to power, especially anybody who used the law. That's a breach of their oath right there. And interesting, it would be interesting, I think, to find out who was speaking in the law that they considered to be one of those domestic violent extremists, and have those people go after them for that. Because by going after those people, they actually allowed harm to be committed on the people. No different than a YouTube did taking down the content behind the woodshed, or any other platform that took down the content since 2019. Remember, I just didn't call it out and identify it and show you how to avoid it. I told you this is a plan coming through. Anybody who spoke out that way was going to be determined to be the terrorist that they established back in 9/11. As I told you, why it was going to be hindsight 2020. Did we get what they did to us in 9/11 through the Patriot? And it wasn't just the U.S. Quite amazing, this global attack at warp speed. Silenced as terrorists, Tulsi Gabbard in global collusion to criminalize American dissent. The U.S., U.K., big tech, and intelligence agencies conspired to brand peaceful citizens as domestic threats for opposing COVID-19 mandates and defending medical freedom. Quote, this is just one of the many alarming actions by the Biden administration, using government power to label concerned parents, vaccine mandate opponents, and other citizens exercising their First Amendment rights as potential domestic extremists. It wasn't just domestic extremists. It was violent extremists. As Tulsi Gabbard said when she disclosed this newly declassified document, in a time when speaking the truth can cost your freedom or your reputation, what began as a public health discourse has now morphed into a high-tech globalized censorship regime. Again, all predicted behind the woodshed to you. Operation Hindsight 2020. Would you watch it happen to you again after seeing it happen 20 years before, roughly, at 9/11? A growing body of evidence reveals that U.S. and U.K. governments colluded with big tech and intelligence agencies to target American citizens, the author says, myself included, as domestic violent extremists, DVEs, not just domestic extremists. Not for acts of violence, but for sharing dissenting views of COVID-19 mandates and medical autonomy. This is not hyperbole. It is documented history unfolding in real time. The UK-US meeting that sparked a global playbook. In August 2021, the Biden-Harris administration hosted a closed-door interagency meeting with the United Kingdom's Counter-Disinformation Unit. The intent? To replicate the UK's aggressive censorship model across US government agencies. Can I read that again? The intent? To replicate the UK's aggressive censorship model across the US government agencies. Right, King Charles? Including the CIA, the FBI, DHS, and HHS with the goal of suppressing what was euphemistically labeled misinformation. That's fraudulently, at least. The CDU presented its framework, create specialized units for censorship coordination, push legislation to force each to tech compliance, and form global partnerships to standardize speech regulation. What happened to your Constitution and First Amendment right, folks? All these folks in the United States and the agents in the United States take an oath to uphold that Constitution, doing this with the UK government. We think we're independent of the UK? Are you kidding me? Go read the original documents. Go read that Pediatrice. No, excuse me, that's a Treaty of Peace. What Russia's trying to get right now from the Ukraine, and they're trying to dance around. These were not hypothetical strategies. They were blueprints for censorship industrial complex that rapidly took shape under the guise of pandemic response. And again, there's no such thing as a pandemic inside the United States. Just months in December 2021, an intelligence bulletin co-authored by FBI, DHS, and National Counterterrorism Center suggested that narratives opposing COVID-19 vaccines and mask mandates could be signs of potential domestic terrorism. Let me interject. I guess we're safe behind the woodshed. It wasn't a narrative I was pressing. It wasn't a narrative I was advocating. No, we pushed the law. Then here's your law. Here's your organic establishment. Now start adhering to it. They may not like that, but what can I tell you? I guess imposing the law is a domestic violent terrorism, extremism. Isn't that fascinating? By lowering the bar from actions to opinions, federal agencies gained a mandate to surveil, deplatform, and investigate U.S. citizens based on speech alone. Or did they? They just did it. See, this is the thing about the 9/11 problem. You just do it. You see what you can get away with. And national security gets away with a whole lot, doesn't it? That's why all this stuff has to be stopped. That's why the Patriot Act needs to be repealed and everything, all its progeny. This policy was not just chilling. It was dangerous. In criminalizing questioning, it painted parents, doctors, scientists, and natural health advocates as threats to the national security. But notice being behind the woodshed wasn't in that list. So maybe we're pretty good here, right? It labeled a dozen Americans as part of the so-called disinformation dozen that helped justify our systemic censorship and erasure from the digital commons. Under the banner of safety, a precedent was established. Disagree with the government's health policies and you may be flagged as a radical. Former FBI agent Steve Friend warned that this approach would be used to pressure platforms like Facebook and ex-Twitter to silence dissenters, effectively privatizing censorship with plausible deniability. The government tech fusion of power has triggered what some are calling the second red square, only this time the ideological enemy is not communism, but unapproved speech concerning fundamental human rights, such as the right to choose what happens to your constitutionally protected body. In early 2025, Director of National Intelligence Tulsi Gabbard publicly announced the end of the binary domestic terrorism strategy, calling it an abuse of power that conflated political opposition with national security threats. Domestic terrorism was subsequently removed from the top intelligence priorities. I thought that was fascinating. I didn't realize that. Domestic terrorism was subsequently removed from the list of top intelligence priorities. Yet this reversal did not undo the damage already inflicted. Countless Americans had been surveilled, deplatformed, and vilified for engaging in constitutionally protected expression. Lives were ruined. Trust was shattered. Ongoing theme throughout this broadcast. Again, trust is evaporating in all sorts of areas, except Trump, Trump, Trump. But watch close, folks. Look very carefully. The tide, however, is turning. Lawsuits have now been filed against those who orchestrated this coordinated takedown of free speech, among the named in the UK-based Center for Countering Digital Hate and its CEO, Imran Ahmed. Their actions colluding with the governments to silence critics are now under legal scrutiny. We are living through a defining moment in history. The pandemic may have ended, but the authoritarian impulse it unleashed remains. From covert interagency meetings to de facto blacklists, the war of dissent has been shown on its face, and now so too has the resilience of those who stand for truth, health, freedom, and unalienable rights endowed to us all. Let this be a record. Let it be a warning. And let it be a call to rise. In that spirit, half of the so-called disinformation dozen, myself included, have just filed an historic lawsuit against the very institutions and actors responsible for those coordinated attacks on free speech. This legal action is not just personal, it's about protecting the sacred rights of all. And at the link is the lawsuit filing. You can look it over and see if anything appeals to you to advance for yourself, and maybe even critique it for errors, and don't make those errors either, as I've explained to you before. Maybe carry your own torch as you can. Maybe there's more information to be gleaned to help people and yourself in how this worked out. And I don't know that anybody will be discussing the law, and the communicable disease law, and the fact that there was no basis in the federal government to do any of it. And that in a touch anybody became a breach of the governmental obligations and duties to we the people. This is BTW RLM 630. And with one of the themes of the advisory councils, their lack of authority, advice is important, and I'd like to see Trump become much better informed, because it seems those he has taken advice from are not too terrific. They're making him look bad, very bad. Trump claims Putin has gone absolutely crazy for no reason. For no reason, folks. No reason at all. U.S. President Donald Trump has reacted to Russian overnight missile raids on Ukraine by insisting that his Russian counterpart, Vladimir Putin, has, quote, gone absolutely crazy for no reason. Speaking to journalists on Sunday, Trump claimed Russia's response was unwarranted and said he was surprised by what he is seeing. Quote, I'm not happy with Putin's doing, he said. We're in the middle of talking, and he's shooting rockets into Kiev and other cities, and I don't like it at all. We'll see what I'm going to do. I've always had a very good relationship with Vladimir Putin of Russia, but something has happened to him. He has gone absolutely crazy, Trump added in a post on Truth Social, claiming that missiles and drones are being shot into cities in Ukraine for no reason whatsoever. And Trump said that despite a week of constant Ukrainian drone raids across Russia involving several hundred UAVs, Ukraine significantly intensified its drone attacks inside Russia last week, with at least 764 drones intercepted over Russian territory from Tuesday to Friday, and hundreds more destroyed over the weekend. A helicopter carrying Russian President Vladimir Putin was reportedly caught in the epicenter of a massive drone raid while he was visiting Kursk region on Tuesday. Again, Kursk is inside Russia. In response, Russian military conducted a major strike against a drone and missile production plant in Kiev on Saturday, followed by an additional reported strikes on Ukrainian military facilities on Sunday. Let's look a bit closer at the no reason, the possible assassination attempt, when Putin's helicopter was caught in a Ukrainian drone swarm, as retold by a commander that was there. The helicopter carrying Russian President Vladimir Putin was caught in an epicenter of a massive Ukrainian drone attack while the president was visiting Kursk region early this week. Yuri Dashkin, the commander of an air defense division, has revealed Putin traveled to Russia's Kursk region on Tuesday for the first time since it was fully liberated from Ukrainian forces in April. So there's not a reason there, folks, either. No, Ukraine can just invade Russia as it wants. There's no reason. In an interview with the channel Russian One aired on Sunday, Dashkin revealed that Putin's helicopter had found itself, quote, in the epicenter of an operation to repel a massive drone attack by the enemy in the Kursk region. Kiev launched an unprecedented UAV assault on the region when the president was there, with Russian air defenses destroying 46 incoming fixed-wing UAVs, according to Dashkin. Quote, I would like to stress the fact that the intensity of the attacks during the flight of the Supreme Commander-in-Chief's aircraft over the territory of Kursk region increased significantly, he said. The air defense units in the area had to simultaneously conduct anti-aircraft combat and ensure the safety of the president's helicopter in the air. The task was accomplished. The attack of the enemy drones was repelled, with all aerial targets being hit, Dashkin. Do you think about that? The president's right flying in there, and all of a sudden they're trying to defend him and also counterattack the drone attack. Pretty interesting, and I think that through. There's some pretty neat technology being worked on right now, and apparently they didn't have an accident. They weren't AI error prone either. The Foreign Ministry of Moscow reported that 764 drones had been intercepted over Russian territory. Over Russian territory. Between Tuesday and Friday, attacking mostly civilians on top of it, folks. According to the Defense Ministry, the scale of the assault has not abated, with hundreds more UAVs being destroyed on Saturday and Sunday. Russian Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said on Saturday that, quote, some European nations led by the UK, France, Germany, and the EU leadership, who are supporting Kiev and want the conflict to continue, bear some responsibility for the drone raids. And I want you to remember this little passage right here, that this is escalating itself. These folks are bearing a much greater responsibility as they're moving forward and not wanting to make peace and not wanting the war to stop. As we now hear, long-range Taurus missiles might be flying in to Russia, possibly. So maybe look back on all this report and saying, relative to no reason, might an Ukrainian assassination attempt on Putin in his own country or anywhere be a reason for Putin to retaliate against the Ukrainian military? Maybe. How would President Trump respond, President, if they did that? To not respond, wouldn't he be absolutely crazy too? Or is the problem that calling Putin crazy distracts from President Trump's arms, supplies, and continued support of NATO and Ukraine? Instead of eliminating both, enabling that attack that Putin had to respond. Isn't it insane not to respond when you suggest Putin is insane for responding to your enabling aggression and assassination attempt, President Trump? How is that not insane to consider that peacemaking? And isn't it insane to keep blaming Putin instead of just stopping this foreign entanglement the Founding Fathers admonished against? How is it continuing these foreign entanglements, making America great again, when foreign entanglements never were to be engaged in by America? But we're to believe there is just no reason. Here's what they don't tell you about the massive Russian strikes on Ukraine. Moscow is doing what must be done to protect its civilians from Kiev's campaign of terror. And I want to point this out. The Ukraine government has been attacking civilians over and over and over. And Russia is being very methodical about attempting to limit any civilian casualties and only attacking military or military support facilities. And all I've been looking at, I cannot see an error in that. Yes, mistakes are made, but it's not their intent. Completely different than Kiev, but, President Trump can't see a problem with when Ukraine does it. In the current media frenzy surrounding the conflict between Russia and Ukraine, a glaring double standard continues to distort public perception, the nature and impact of drone warfare. Western outlets, politicians, and NGOs are quick to pounce on Russia for retaliatory actions that remain eerily silent about Ukraine's increasingly reckless and escalatory drone campaign. This selective outrage has not only undermined serious dialogue on peace, it has shielded Ukraine from accountability as it wages what can only be described as a campaign of terror against Russian civilians. Over the past few weeks, Ukraine's use of drones has surged into both frequency and range on nearly a daily basis. Dozens, sometimes hundreds of drones are launched toward Russia territory, many targeting civilian infrastructure or flying indiscriminately toward dense urban centers like Moscow. While Russia's air defense systems have performed admirably in intercepting the majority of these threats, the falling debris poses an unavoidable risk to civilians, including children and elderly. Russia's regions far from the front lines have been forced into a state of constant vigilance, air raid alerts disrupting the normalcy of everyday life. Unlike military-grade precision operations, Ukraine's drone attacks appear designed less to achieve tactical objectives and more to instill fear. The targets are often electrical substations, communications towers, or simply proximity to residential areas. This cannot be framed as a mere collateral damage. It's a campaign whose effects are felt mostly and deeply by citizens. I'm really going through that. My mind keeps going back to we, the people, that were pointing out that the bioweapons they called vaccines were improper and violated the law. We were considered domestic violent extremists. And yet President Trump looks past Ukraine, the government of Ukraine, doing the very same thing through its shots at civilians in Russia. It's completely crazy of Putin to continue to protect his people from the West's fostered and encouraged arms supply attacks and cause the Russian troops to conduct counterstrikes exclusively used against Ukrainian military facilities and military industrial complex enterprises in response to Zelensky's regime and their massive drone attacks on the Russian regime. Right, President Trump? But the genocide in Gaza is not crazy? And totally terrific, too, seems to indicate the insane are running the asylum. And more on that, or where the West is lifting limits on long-range weapons to Ukraine, and simply crazy that the Kremlin reacts. The decision runs counter to Moscow's efforts to find a peaceful settlement with Kiev, a spokesman Dmitry Peskov has said. The reported decision of Ukraine's Western backers to lift restrictions on Kiev's use of long-range weapons runs counter to Russia's efforts toward a peaceful settlement of the conflict. Peskov made the remarks in response to comments made by German Chancellor Friedrich Merz, who said Ukraine is no longer subject to range limitations on Western-supplied weaponry. Quote, if such decisions have indeed been made, they are entirely at odds with our aspirations for a political resolution and with the efforts currently being made toward a settlement, Peskov stated. Well, quite dangerous decision again, if they were indeed made, he stressed. At the Europa Forum on Monday, Merz said, quote, there are no longer any range restrictions on Western-supplied weapons used by Ukraine against Russian military targets. Can I stop us all right there? Against military targets. It doesn't seem like Ukraine limits itself at all. In fact, what started this whole thing was that Ukraine was attacking Ukrainian people that wanted to speak Russian with these drones and these attacks and these ballistics and these munitions. And Russia just said, enough's enough. Stop. You won't stop? Okay, we're going to make you stop. Quote, there are no restrictions for the UK, France, Germany, or the US, he added, as quoted by Euronews. Moscow has repeatedly warned Western countries against enabling Ukraine to carry out long-range strikes, arguing that this could make military bloc a direct participant in the conflict, given that such attacks would require targeting data from NATO satellites, NATO satellites, capabilities that Kiev does not possess. Moscow updated its nuclear doctrine last November following deliberations by Ukrainian backers on whether to allow Kiev to use Western-supplied long-range missiles to strike deep inside Russia. It'll be crazy if Russia responds, won't it, President Trump? Russian President Vladimir Putin expanded the list of the conditions that could trigger a nuclear response to include scenarios where aggression by a non-nuclear state or a group of states supported by a nuclear state could be viewed as a joint attack. So I guess taking nuclear glowing out of the BTW opening would have been premature. That would be crazy, right, Peacemaker Trump? Especially when we know the history of the area, that we ought to be able to do better. As we're told all the time, these things roll right together just to expose the failures of the West, expose the failures of Trump, expose the fake. Is not the peacemaker he's claiming, and again, running a cover story over what's really going on. Moscow was forced to launch military operations against Kiev, says Putin. Then we go back into history, we'll read some of this stuff. Again, it's not all, none of this is done in a vacuum. And I'm just, the reason why I'm going on with this long, when Trump came out and said there was no reason, I've got to seriously start questioning Trump. Not just his advisors, but himself. The conflict stems from Western-backed coup in Ukraine, the Russian president has said. Russia was left with no choice but to launch its military operations in Ukraine because of the continued persecution. Now, say that again. The continued persecution of the people of Donbas by Kiev following the 2014 Western-backed Euromaidan coup, President Vladimir Putin has said during a meeting. Let me just interject there. They keep saying he said. No, this is a fact. He says it, but it's a fact. Anybody could be saying this. Now, he's the president, comes with some authority. But it's not just that he said it. It is the fact of what happened. During a meeting with a group of businessmen in the Kremlin on Monday, Putin said Moscow could not ignore the plight of Russian speakers in the neighboring country. He reiterated Russia's position that the conflict stems from the turbulent events in Kiev in early 2014 when initially peace protesters spiraled into riots and clashes with the police, which led to the ouster of the democratically elected president Viktor Yanukovych. The anti-Yanukovych forces included ultra-nationalist groups such as Right Sector and Svoboda. Quote, you need to understand that we weren't the ones who orchestrated the coup in Ukraine. The West has always told us that there should be a democracy in elections, but they carried out a coup. A bloody one, in fact. As if it were normal. They later went on to suppress the Donbas, killing people with helicopters and jets. They practically forced us into doing what we're doing today. And now they're trying to blame us for it, he said. Putin cited the Ukraine's failure to respect the Minsk Accords and the attacks on the rights of Russian speakers as the root causes of the conflict, describing Kiev's actions as genocide. So, I don't know why that is new news. He just reiterated what I've been talking about since I've been talking about the Ukraine condition and that situation that Trump should know. There should be more than no reason for why Russia is doing what they are doing, and that Putin has got to do what he's doing. And to negate that is a major absence or a lie, a big deception of what's going on with Trump. And it also shows he's got no cards, as I said. He's got last episode, no charisma either, we find out. He cannot persuade the fact and reality. Not someone who's got principles. There's only one thing bad, Medvedev responded to Trump's rebuke to Putin. President Donald Trump warned Russian leader Vladimir Putin that he was playing with fire. Quote, Putin doesn't understand that if he weren't for me, a lot of really bad things would have already happened to Russia. I mean, very bad. He's playing with fire, Trump wrote on the Truth Social Network. Medvedev commented on the current post of U.S. President Donald Trump with that Russian leader Vladimir Putin is playing with fire by saying, as for Trump's words that Putin is playing with fire and really bad things are happening to Russia, I know only one really bad thing. The Third World War. I hope Trump understands this, wrote Medvedev, quoted by the RBC. Let me remind you here behind Novichok. Quote, if you need the Russian nuclear doctrine targeting the Russian president as a trigger for Russian nuclear retaliation or preemptive strikes, you would have to ask then, who is playing with fire then? It's not Vladimir Putin who is playing with fire. It's Ukraine and the West and Trump that are playing with fire. Because if an assassination attempt, not merely an epicenter coincidence, if it's understood that Ukrainian drones targeted the Russian president was not done in a vacuum and would have required assistance of the West, because drones are not normally used against aircraft like that, which means that the West was targeting the Russian president, or those interests that targeted the now suggestive nicked ear Trump for assassination. Maybe me not removing the nuclear glowing postulated cricketism from the intro of this broadcast under peacemaker-induced opium-filled hallucination would have been premature. And we're right back to it, though. If this guy, Trump, sees no reason, how close are we? I always say, you point your finger at somebody, you got three pointing back. We're talking about some very serious issues here. You don't just flippantly go through them. Russia's not going to be pushed around. And I get, again, thinking about that, and just, I don't see why we see the mistakes going on, why the chaos, why the question. In a follow-up report, playing with fire, Trump ran over Putin as Peskov again comes to fore to talk with Fox News. The United States once again expressed dissatisfaction with Russia's position on the Ukrainian conflict. President Donald Trump has warned Russian leader Vladimir Putin that he is playing with fire. Well, Putin does not understand that if it were me, a lot of really bad things would have already happened for Russia. I mean, really bad. He's playing with fire, Trump writes. And this is the thing that's interesting about these stories. They keep repeating this part of what Trump wrote on Truth Social in all places. But you go back and do a different analysis. If it weren't for Trump, is for sure. Because Trump didn't stop supplying arms during Trump 1 is the reason Russia is here today. It is the United States that's learning it played with fire, thinking it could engage in a hybrid war to defeat Russia. The U.S., after its overthrow of 2014 of the democratically elected government of Ukraine, lost in the opening salvo in imposing those comprehensive sanctions amounting to embargo, for what I could tell, against Russia. And now the United States gets emotional that it has no cards to play against Russia as its ground operation turns toward victory in the controlling party in the Treaty of Peace, which is imminent if they're going to end the fighting, as I mentioned earlier in the broadcast. And on the Fox News channel, Presidential Press Secretary Dmitry Peskov was accused of allegedly not being interested in peace on Ukraine. The reason was his statement about Trump's emotional overload. Peskov noted in a professional speaker and knows the words to use to provoke a reaction, like that's exactly what he's doing. So when is Fox going to deal with the facts on the ground instead of berating a professional Russian spokesman? Quote, of course, there was a very important moment, the beginning of the negotiation process, which is connected, of course, with the emotional overload of everyone absolutely and with emotional reactions. We are closely monitoring all reactions, however, the President of the Russian Federation, Vladimir Putin, makes the decisions that are necessary to ensure the security of our country, Peskov said, answering a question from a journalist about Trump's statement that something happened to Trump. That I read all these things, the explanation has to come out as childish, as I'm hearing, is really an embarrassment as well. However, they break the spokesman because he's a professional spokesman. That's why he's got his job. He's the face of the nation there. He's actually the voice of the president. And he has to explain this. It's pretty interesting. Then he gets challenged because of his position. It's just another embarrassment. We're not talking about emotions. And Russia knows that. And yet that's all we're getting from the West, emotional reaction. So let's hope Trump doesn't make this sort of bonehead mistake with Russia. And not to be confused, no, with our new host, soon to be added to the schedule at reallibertymedia.com, Uncle Bonehead. Listen for him here coming up Friday nights when he puts on the schedule. I think it's going to be here as soon as the 6th of June. And your generous donation here helping RLM to bring together the bestest content fit to hear is what's helped that. Please find those donation buttons and thank you. Maybe consider being bonehead enough to find your place in the building schedule. And unlike Uncle Bonehead, this official bonehead, Black South Africa, white genocide claims with Congo footage by the President of the United States. The United States President showed a screen grab from a video of aid workers lifting body bags in a rebel-held Congolese city. A screen grab from the video that United States President Trump presented as evidence of white farmers being killed in South Africa originated from footage of unrest in the Democratic Republic of Congo. Now remember, one of the things I'm running through here is the advice to Trump. Apparently he doesn't leave his desk or look up. He's handed stuff and he just believes it. He's a very dangerous president. But he did it. Trump showed the image during the White House meeting with the South African president, Cyril Ramaphosa, on Wednesday, holding up the printout of an article that featured a screen grab from footage which Reuters said was originally published on February 3rd. According to the news agency, the video shows humanitarian workers handling body bags in Goma, one of the main cities of the eastern Congo captured by M23 rebels amid the intense fighting in late January. Now, just think about it. Are you in the habit of blaming the wrong people of killings they didn't actually cause, President Trump? Why? More importantly, how does doing that make America great again? It's like I'm starting to get confuseder and confuseder, but it's because I think I'm not confused. I'm not emoting. Because things aren't looking too rosy if Ukraine's RADA member is correct, particularly in light of the recent distance ban on Germany provided Taurus deep strike cruise missiles. The management was told Ukraine, which they knew, is no longer there and will not be there. Forget it. It's coldest. In the coming years, Ukraine will face a full-scale war with Russia with attacks by swarms of UAVs with artificial intelligence on cities. This was stated by Verkhovna Rada Deputy Mariana Vezgulaya. The humanity as a whole, it predicts an abyss. A world war with redistribution, a technological breakthrough, and a change of state systems. That's that stinking abyss I've been talking about forever, as long as I've been broadcasting. An abyss awaits us in the coming years. Full-scale war with the advance of Russians in the east and attacks by AI drone swarms in cities, the world war and redistribution of world and generally versatile technological breakthrough of humanity and complete restructuring of relations with integration of artificial intelligence, robotics, and cybernation of life, change of state systems. All this will happen very quickly, Vezugulaya writes in her Telegram channel. Cybernation, folks. Siberian gulag. What do you like that? Pretty interesting, huh? Slowly comes along. People are seeing it. They're finding out this is someone that's in the government. Probably been told. In a few years, it will be impossible to know either the world of Ukraine, the deputy claims. The Ukraine, we knew, is no longer there and will never, ever be. Forget it. As for our leadership, we have brought everything to everyone, sums up Vezugulaya. I'm looking for the future of this one, folks. I don't think she's wrong. And another thing here, not going too terrific under Let Them Eat Chaos Trump administration. FBI Director Kash Patel abruptly closes internal watchdog office overseeing surveillance compliance. Once a longtime critic of FBI surveillance, Patel is now singing a different tune. What happens when they get in office? What happens to these folks when they get in office? What video are they shown? What images are they shown? What have they done in their life to be doing these changes when they get in office? If there's one thing the Federal Bureau of Investigation does well, it's mass surveillance and falsely claiming that you're a domestic violent extremist as well, remember. Several years ago, the Attorney General William Barr established an internal office to curb the FBI's abuse of one controversial surveillance law. But recently, the FBI's longstanding hater and ironically current director, Kash Patel, shut down the watchdog group without an explanation. On Tuesday, the New York Times reported that Patel suddenly closed the Office of Internal Auditing and Barr created in 2020. Think about that one now, folks. 2020. The office leader, Cindy Hall, promptly retired, and then the people familiar with the matter told the outlet that the closure of the aforementioned watchdog group alongside the Office of Integrity and Compliance are part of the internal reorganization. Sources also reportedly said that Hall was trying to expand the office's work, but her attempt to onboard new employees was stopped by Trump's administration hiring freezes. The Office of Internal Auditing was a response to controversy surrounding the FBI's use of Section 702 of the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Act. The 2008 law primarily addresses surveillance of non-Americans abroad. However, Jeremy Scott, senior counselor of Electronic Privacy Information Center, told Gizmodo via email that the FBI, quote, has repeatedly abused its ability to search Americans' communications incidentally collected under Section 702 to conduct warrantless spying. Patel has not released any official comment regarding his decision to close the office, but Elizabeth Goitein, senior director of the Brennan Center for Justice, told Gizmodo via email, quote, it is hard to square this move with Mr. Patel's own stated concerns about the FBI's use of Section 702. Last year, Congress reauthorized Section 702 despite mounting concerns over its misuses. And as the FBI watchdog gets muzzled or euthanized, U.S. spy agencies are getting a one-stop shop to buy your most sensitive personal data. The government wants to build a centralized platform where spy agencies can more easily buy private info about millions of people. The overgrowing market of personal data has been a boon to American spy agencies. The U.S. intelligence community is now buying up vast volumes of sensitive information that would have previously required a court order, essentially bypassing the Fourth Amendment. But the surveillance state has encountered a problem. There's simply too much data on sale from too many corporations and brokers. So the government has a plan for a one-stop shop. The Office of Director of National Intelligence is working on a system to centralize and streamline We say efficiency too here. Just to efficientize it. Efficiency, folks. Streamline the use of commercial available information, or CAI, likely location data derived from mobile ads by American spy agencies according to contract documents reviewed by The Intercept. The data portal will include information deemed by the ODNI as highly sensitive to which can be misused to cause substantial harm, embarrassment, and inconvenience to U.S. persons. Another status right there, U.S. persons, not citizens, U.S. persons. There's about 25 different statuses, but last time I counted. And there's hundreds of persons definitions in state law. Just go, every person's subject to that qualified code. The documents state spy agencies will use the web portal not just to search through reams of private data, but also run through artificial intelligence tools for further analysis. Now remember, from earlier in the broadcast, AI hallucinates, produces false, nonsensical, and fabricated information with high confidence. What could go wrong, folks? And in a follow-up on the Coinbase data breach I reported on last episode, as we consider the one-stop data shop, it is conceivable now how hacks here can seriously adversely affect people beyond data. As we read, the Coinbase data breach will lead to people dying, says TechCrunch founder Michael Arrington, argued that the executives should be jailed if they don't adequately protect sensitive user data. Let me just, as I read that, I read it again, I just read it here. That's going to be a condition no different than the vaccine protection that was done for pharmaceutical companies. It's going to be too much to give, to allow them to be unprotected with the vulnerabilities in this system that the government needs to have for public interest purposes. Moving on here. But what about the data keepers of the one-stop data shop? Not just these CEOs, but the government itself. TechCrunch founder Michael Arrington has claimed that a recent data breach at Coinbase will lead to people dying. Arrington's claim comes amid a wave of kidnap attempts targeting high net worth crypto holders. Soon to be everyone, even if you don't have a lot. Former Coinbase CTO Balaji Srinivasan argued that fault lines with state-mandated KYC data collection. No, that was the PATRIT Act, Know Your Captive data collection requirement that continues this nonsense, which Representative Luna is attempting to repeal, as I reported on last episode. And I hope my listener can help with that happen for her, as I explained here last episode about that. On Thursday, Coinbase announced that cyber criminals tried to blackmail the exchange into paying $20 million in Bitcoin over the stolen customer data, which it refused to pay. Instead, the company put out a $20 million award for information that will lead to the arrest and conviction of the attackers. The crypto exchange has also pledged to reimburse any customers that were tricked into sending funds to the attackers. Let me just stop there. We heard that it wasn't about the funds that was really the danger relative to Arrington's claim. Your personal safety, a kidnapping, a ransom for you physically, is what the real danger is. Dying if you don't. TechCrunch founder and venture capitalist Michael Arrington added that this should be a point of reflection for regulators to rethink the importance of Know Your Customer, KYC, Know Your Captive, a process that requires users to confirm their identity to a platform. He also called for prison time for executives that fail to adequately protect customer information. I think it would be much easier if Representative Luna was able to repeal the PATRIT Act and any progeny and remove your Know Your Customer fraudulent imposition on us. They don't need to know about you to do simple business for you. Especially like we used to have bank accounts, they didn't care. You had an ID, or you had a way to get to your bank. You had your number. You had your passbook, they used to call them. What happened in those days? Well, it turned into 911. It turned into the great Kobe Swivel. It turned into the future that they want. It turned into Palantir and one-stop data shops and AI. More not too terrific news from the Let Them Eat Chaos administration. Federal court says Trump doesn't have the power to impose tariffs unilaterally. The U.S. Court of International Trade permanently vacated tariffs. A federal court has determined that President Trump, Donald Trump, does not have the authority to unilaterally impose tariffs, dealing a sweeping blow to the president's main weapon in his ongoing global trade war. Did you know that, folks? The whole thing is a trade war. The peacemaker. A panel of judges on the United States Court of International Trade found the tariffs were unlawful and permanently vacated them. Since Trump announced sweeping tariffs on more than 50 countries in April, his administration has faced half a dozen lawsuits challenging the president's ability to impose tariffs without approval of Congress. The Court of International Trade issued its ruling in a case brought by a group of five small businesses who argued that Trump's tariffs are an unprecedented power grab. Lawyers for these small businesses alleged that the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, which Trump invoked to impose the tariffs, does not give the president the right to issue, quote, across-the-board worldwide tariffs, close quote, and that Trump's justification for tariffs was invalid. Quote, his claimed emergency is a figment of his own imagination, the lawsuit said. Quote, trade deficits, which have persisted for decades without causing economic harm, are not an emergency. During a hearing earlier this month, a group of three judges who were appointed by Presidents Obama, Trump, and Reagan pushed a lawyer for the small businesses to provide legal basis to override the tariffs, while a different court in the 1970s determined that the Trading with the Enemy Act of 1917, the law that preceded the International Emergency Economic Powers Act, gave the president the right to impose tariffs. No court has weighed whether the president can impose tariffs unilaterally under the IEEPA. During a May 13th hearing, Jeffrey Schwab, a lawyer from the Conservative Liberty Justice Center representing the plaintiffs, argued that Trump's purported emergency to justify the tariffs is far short of what is required under the law. Quote, I'm asking the court to be an umpire and call a strike. You're asking me, well, where's the strike zone? Is it at the knees or slightly below the knees? Schwab argued. Quote, I'm saying it's a wild pitch and it's on the other side of the batter and hits the backstop, so we don't need to debate that. The ruling marks the first time a federal court has issued a ruling on the legality of Trump's tariffs. In May, a federal judge in Florida nominated by Trump suggested the president has the authority to unilaterally impose tariffs, but opted to transfer the case to the Court of International Trade. And upon that news, the markets rejoiced. Now on to appeals. Oh, and wouldn't you know it, just in. Trump's tariff, live, appeals court allows tariffs to stay in effect over a trade rebuke. A federal appeals court allowed President Trump's sweeping tariffs to temporarily stay in effect a day after the United States Court of International Trade blocked their implementation after deeming the method used to enact them unlawful. That means Trump's tariffs agenda remains intact, if in flux. Did you say chaos right there? If in flux, is the latest twist in the unfolding legal saga. Amid the legal chaos. Let them eat chaos, folks. Amid the legal chaos, U.S. trade negotiations have apparently continued in earnest this week, with an FT report on Wednesday saying India has offered the U.S. steep tariff cuts but is seeking to retain high duties on some agricultural commodities. So just let them eat chaos, folks. That's what this administration does. As I've said, he didn't need to make such a chaotic approach, destabilize people's lives, destabilize the businesses for a balanced trade system, for a better tariff system. I don't understand how and why it wouldn't have worked to give the nations up 6 months to a year, say, if we don't make a deal, this will be your tariffs. And give the society, give the corporations, give all the companies enough time to see how the negotiations were going and to give reason and let the administration explain itself so that people have an understanding of what they're to expect and what's to be done. Billions of dollars burned. Trump's tariffs hit global giants. On April 2nd, Donald Trump signed an executive order that implemented reciprocal tariffs on imports from various countries. U.S. tariffs damaged major firms, Reuters research shows. The $33 billion represents the total estimates from 32 S&P 500 companies, including America, European, and Asian firms. Economists say the cost of businesses will likely be multiple times that companies have so far disclosed. 42 companies slashed forecasts. 16 withdrew guidance entirely. Auto and airline sectors hit the hardest. Supply chains in chaos. It's all in the news this week, folks. The chaos. Let them eat. Trump will let them eat chaos. How does that make America great again? Where chaos is unnecessary. Well, unless the chaos is running cover for the establishment of a global order out of that chaos for the bankers. But look here, folks. Step right up. Look right here. Look, a big, beautiful bill. A debt-increasing millstone around your neck that is beautiful. Beautiful, I say. If you're a fiat-mongering parasite. Regarding that big, beautiful bill and that is going up, this interesting story pops in and just nothing seems to make any sense about how we're looking at someone that ran on a campaign that was going to reduce the amount of government, the size of government, the regulations, all this stuff. And then we got to that little gift. I questioned the value of that when I found, you know, you find out it's going to cost a lot of money to upgrade that jet, that guitar luxury jet. Trump has one big gripe about the guitar luxury jet. There's nothing about this guy that's stable, it seems. Frankly, it's much too big, he told reporters on Wednesday about the controversial gift from the Mideast. And that's not even really the horrendous part of all this. It's even worse than I was thinking, to take this aircraft and make it an Air Force One. But we've got the big, beautiful bill, though, folks. President Trump makes no secret admiring big, beautiful things, but the controversial $400 million luxury jet he says was a gift from the U.S. from Qatar may be too large, even for him. Although Trump told reporters on Wednesday that the recently accepted Boeing 747, which the Defense Department plans to convert into Air Force One, was a beautiful, big, magnificent, free airplane for the United States Air Force, it may be too much for him personally. Trump's gripe? They tried to say, oh, it's Trump's airplane. He said that the 747-8 aircraft from Qatar, which is about 18 feet longer than the 747-200B that serves as the current Air Force One. Oh, yeah, sure, it's too big. Frankly, it's too much too big. The president ordered that. He was very proud that he finagled the deal. Controversy. Trump has been under fire from both sides of the aisle for accepting the plane, with some saying it's a violation of the constitutional ban on accepting foreign gifts. He hedged a bit on Wednesday when asked if the jet definitely would be converted to Air Force One, a process expected to take years, and the plane is currently being refitted for military standard, is all Trump would say when pushed about the conversion price tag. The president replied it would still be a hell of a lot less than building a new one. The conversion, retrofitting the aircraft, expected to be carried out in Texas, will be undertaken by Defense Contractor L3Harris, per the Post, in addition to the estimated $1.5 billion, $1.5 Bravo dollars it will take to bring the plane up to the needed security and safety standards. It could run another $500 million to rip all the sensitive gear out of when Trump leaves office, at which point Trump has said the plane will head to his presidential library foundation, a plane worth only $400 million. Another wrinkle, the transfer of the plane may not even be done yet. It may not be a done deal, despite the Defense Department's claim otherwise. Sources tell the paper that the U.S. and Qatari governments haven't legally finalized the arrangement. The Qatar wants a memorandum of understanding set up, which is acknowledged that the Trump administration initiated the exchange. It was maybe just a gift, a little bit of arm twisting maybe, and that Qatar wouldn't be responsible for who eventually ends up with the jet in their hands. Interesting remaining obligation, I thought. But yeah, no, we got a big, beautiful bill. We're going to reduce our taxes. Then he gets a $400 million gift and dumps over $2 billion into it. I don't know how that makes America great again, but that's what's going on with this guy. This has been BTW RLM 630, and I'll be with you next week. Tech Diffs for Nature Willing.
It goes cold. The hour is near. Behind the woodshed, the truth you'll hear. Every Sunday, the clock strikes three. Hal's voice rolls like thunder, fierce and free. Pull up a chair, lean in close. Lessons to learn, dose by dose. Behind the woodshed, no stone unturned.
Call behind the wood.